Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, September 15, 2016. A delegation of Human Rights Commission visiting Juba say there are many cases of rape during the July fighting in the capital.
The women in particular said that their lives continue to be defined by the conflict, increasing their vulnerability. Some of them, including widows and a number of old women, expressed disbelief and horror at being gang raped by young men and boys.
And a U.S. lawmaker is introducing a bill to help South Sudan's lost boys.
The bill is starting out now with 500 people because, and the underlying truth in that is you have to start somewhere. And if there are more than 500 people who are interested in going to South Sudan, that can be addressed in the future.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A UN Commission on Human Rights is calling for a quick formation of a hybrid court to try perpetrators of abuses following outbreak of conflict in South Sudan in December 2013. Today, Commission members wrapped up a seven-day visit to the country where they met internally displaced persons, judiciary officials, and civil society activists. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
Commission Chairperson Yasmin Suka says the IDPs whom the team met want to see perpetrators of human rights abuses and other crimes punished.
The citizens of South Sudan who met with the commissioners made a poignant plea for peace, justice and accountability. The commission appreciates the right of the South Sudanese people for peace and justice and rejects the notion of a false dichotomy between peace and justice. Many have said, and we agree, that one of the root causes of the current tragic situation is an unfortunate lack of accountability, reaching back through many conflicts and unresolved grievances.
Suka says the groups and individuals her commission met in the past 7 days are convinced that breaking the cycle of impunity requires holding perpetrators of abuses and serious crimes accountable. The South Sudan Commission of Human Rights was established by the Human Rights Council in March with a mandate of monitoring and reporting on human rights since the fighting broke out in December 2013 so that transitional justice and reconciliation can begin. Suka says she and her team heard first-hand accounts of the abuses that South Sudanese endured, especially women and children.
The women in particular said that their lives continue to be defined by the conflict, increasing their vulnerability. Some of them, including widows and a number of old women, expressed disbelief and horror at being gang raped by young men and boys who they said are young enough to be their grandchildren.
Suka called on the government officials and African Union to quickly establish institutions as required under the Chapter 5 provisions of the peace agreement.
The Commission is also deeply concerned at the slow progress on the implementation of the provisions of the peace agreement, which is fundamental to ending the conflict, human rights violations, and normalizing the lives of South Sudanese.
Suka says the UN team is also very concerned about continued reports of threats and intimidation against civil society activists, journalists, and women by armed men in uniform.
The diminishing space for civil society, which includes ongoing intimidation and harassment of its members, forcing many of them to flee to neighboring countries. Media freedom and the continued intimidation and harassment of journalists and, of course, media houses. Restrictions placed on access by UNMISS, on access for UNMISS and the humanitarian actors, which really inhibits their ability to reach the most vulnerable in order to carry out their work.
Committee members are expected to travel to the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, to meet with officials from the African Union before visiting a refugee camp in Uganda, where they are scheduled to meet with South Sudanese refugees. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
A committee set up by President Salva Kiir to investigate the July attacks on international aid workers and the mother of a journalist outside the Terrain complex in Juba says it's having a tough time compiling its report because witnesses are not stepping forward. The secretary of the committee says the team could not find any victims since most of them left the country. The committee missed the deadline to submit its report. Tito Justin has more for VOA from Juba.
A month has passed since President Salva Kiir issued a presidential decree appointing a committee to investigate reports that government soldiers raped several international aid workers, beat up civilians, and killed a South Sudanese journalist at the Terrain complex, which accommodates mostly foreign expatriates. Secretary of the Investigation Committee, John Andruga Duku, says the committee is unable to find victims to testify.
All of them are not in the country. And so far, we only receive only one from the one witness, and the rest are not given.
Committee officials urged the eyewitnesses and victims earlier this month to voluntarily provide information about the incident, assuring them that their identity would be kept secret. Andruga says he will not publish the report until there is sufficient information from witnesses and victims of the violence.
We want to give enough time for them to respond because it is very important for the purpose of this investigation that the victims are interviewed.
Matsan Otrumoi, the Deputy Justice and Constitutional Affairs Minister who heads the committee, said last month that a preliminary investigation indicated that the perpetrators stole at least 20 vehicles. Otrumoi claims that some of the suspects are foreigners. The six-member committee, including government and military officials, was supposed to produce a report within 3 weeks. Andruga says that time frame has shifted.
We don't want to give a time frame when the report is going to be left there. But when the committee felt that they could not get all these victims interviewed, and then we will draw conclusion and make the recommendation based on what we have done so far.
Committee Chairman Otrumoi said last month that his team's findings will provide lessons to the government on how to prevent similar incidents from happening again. Foreign aid workers, including Americans, have told their government representatives that men in military uniforms busted the lock on the gate to the complex entrance, burst in, and threatened to gang rape the women if they did not cooperate. Several aid workers said they repeatedly tried to contact UN peacekeepers in Juba to come and intervene, but they never came. Hours later, government soldiers arrived at the Terrain complex. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
The United States say it will support an arms embargo on South Sudan if the country's government blocks the deployment of a regional protection force in the country. VOA's East Africa correspondent Jill Craig talked to an analyst who says an arms embargo has been used as a bargaining chip for far too long.
Better late than never. That's what analysts say about an arms embargo on South Sudan. A former arms expert on the UN panel of experts on South Sudan, Luc van de Vondervoort, told VOA the United States has used the threat of an arms embargo as leverage several times, including to get the government to sign a peace deal with rebels last year.
Both sides have committed the most egregious violations of human rights law, and there have been atrocities committed on a scale that we've not seen in many other contexts where an arms embargo has, in fact, been imposed. So it's normally the thing that you start with, not the thing you try to, not the end state.
He says the delay may have given the government time to prepare.
If you as a government are afraid that you won't be allowed to import bullets anymore, what are you going to do? You make sure you can produce them yourself.
He is referring to a report from Reuters earlier this month. According to the report, UN sanctions monitors had learned that South Sudan's army chief had asked a Lebanese company to begin developing a small arms ammunition manufacturing facility in Juba. The report did not say whether the project had proceeded. South Sudan's conflict has killed tens of thousands since it started in December 2013 and displaced over 2 million. Aid agencies warn hundreds of thousands of people are on the brink of starvation. South Sudan has been free to engage in state-to-state transfers in arms, without restrictions from sellers. Rights groups have been calling for an arms embargo on South Sudan for more than 2 years. Human Rights Watch senior researcher Jahan Henry says it is long overdue.
The weapons that enter South Sudan are inevitably used against civilians in this conflict which is especially abusive, it is especially conducted against civilians, not a classic conflict between classic armies.
Britain and France have supported imposing an arms embargo, while in the past, other members of the UN Security Council have not. Russia says it is still too soon. Since July, government troops have been accused of fresh attacks on civilians, international aid workers, and U.S. diplomats. Some experts say arms embargoes in general don't work. They say there just isn't enough oversight of the global weapons trade to enforce them. Analysts VOA spoke to warned against attaching outsized expectations to one at this stage in South Sudan. Chatham House Horn of Africa research associate Ahmed Soliman said there is no substitute for a political solution.
If they've not acted in the spirit of the agreement since its signing, it doesn't seem as if it's going to change. And I would posit that an arms embargo is probably unlikely to change that. Coupled with travel embargoes and other things, there is a symbolic nature to these sanctions, but that necessarily they're not going to alter the realities on the ground too much and too quickly, I don't think.
Several calls to South Sudan's presidential spokesman for comment went unanswered. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
The spokesman of President Salva Kiir says the relationship between Mr. Kiir and the first vice president, Taban Dengai, has improved. Ateng says President Kiir has delegated Deng to represent South Sudan at the UN General Assembly meeting next week in New York. He says Mr. Kiir and Deng are working hard to restore peace in South Sudan.
President Salva Kiir also trusts him. He actually gave him now the opportunity to represent the government of South Sudan in the United Nations General Assembly, something that would have been impossible if Dr. Yag was in Juba and was still the SPLM-IO leader. President Salva Kiir would not have even trusted Riek Machar, because Riek Machar was actually living here in Juba and was so aggressive to the point that he doesn't show that there is one leader in the country. It is important to note that the two men will be working to return the country to normalcy, because...
You are saying that the two leaders are working to bring back the country to normalcy. This is happening in the backdrop of a very severe economic situation. Can you tell us what the two leaders are doing to improve the economic situation in South Sudan? Because as I speak to you now, the country is moving towards 700% inflation rate.
Well, one of the big impediments to economic progress in South Sudan is the issue of security, insecurity in the country. And insecurity is caused by the fact that, the country was fighting a war, and then after peace was signed, the issue of having the two armies, backfired. And that the SPLA-IO was working as if they were not part of this country at all. And that's the biggest problem. But with the new leadership of the SPLM-IO coming closer to working relationship with President Salva Kiir and the government of the SPLM, the likelihood of having a better security situation in South Sudan is there now to be seen.
Mr. Ateng, between me and you, we are both South Sudanese, and you are aware that the country is polarized along ethnic lines. This is no longer a secret. And there are lots of people who have arms in their hands who are fighting in many parts of South Sudan. I could just give you a checklist. You have people in former central Equatoria along the Juba Yei Road who have been fighting there for quite a long time. You have a group in former Western Bahr al-Ghazal who have been fighting between Raja, Wau, and the rest of the other places. And you have a group of people along the Nimule-Juba Road who have also been attacking vehicles there. And this is just a snapshot. Now, when you say the situation will become normal, how soon will that be?
Well, I will not give you the timetable, but I actually recognize the fact that, the country is polarized. there are some politicians who are actually enjoying the fact that, you know, the country is polarized and the fact that, you know, the country is dividing itself along the ethnic line. And they try to capitalize on this. But the truth of the matter is that South Sudanese knows it better than other, you know, factors, than other, you know, actors in the world. You are a South Sudanese, you know this. But to be honest with you, most of these arms groups that are actually killing even civilians along Numli Road and along Yei Road, targeting them on ethnic line, are the one aggravating the situation. The government of South Sudan tried its best to ensure that it doesn't slip into ethnic line, because if you look at the government of South Sudan,
but the government is entertaining. Let me make some point here. The government of South Sudan looks like it entertains ethnic groupings. For instance, the Jain Council of Elders, the Jain Council of Elders is publicly making statements supporting President Salva Kiir. How do you expect the other communities to be quiet?
No, that's the information misplaced. First of all, there is a misconception about Jain Council of Elders. Jain Council of Elders is a civil society like any other civil society and community organization all over the world. And it is like also the Nuer, groups and the Barrier and the Latuka, and you talk about it. This is not an organization to make sure that the government becomes the Dinka-dominated government. Whatever statement they do is a statement that is peculiar to their own thinking, because they are South Sudanese and they ought to have a say in whatever political situation of the country. And this is not the government policy. The government is different completely from Jain Elders Council. It is those who wanted South Sudan to be seen as if it is a Dinka government that are actually trying to connect Jain Elders Council with the government. I have been in the office of the president for 3 years now, but I never saw President Salva Kiir meeting the Jain Elders Council the way it is said in the media. You know, this is just a misplaced, statement.
That's presidential spokesman Ateng Wek Ateng. He was speaking to me from Juba earlier today. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the lost boys will soon go back home. That story is coming up next.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the first thing you notice about someone when you meet them the first time?
The first thing I observe is their appearance, and secondly, their manner in which they approach me. That will tell me a lot about their character and where they're coming from.
When I see someone for the first time, I take note of the height, or when a man is well-built, the color, especially if he's fair. That captivates me a lot.
Maybe they are kind of dressing. Dressing gives the first impression, so if you're dressed well, I want to talk to you.
The smile really takes me away. So I love to meet people who smile, and that's what I love, and that I note whatever I meet someone. If he doesn't smile, it would be a bad day for me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
Former lost boys and girls could soon be heading back to South Sudan to help rebuild the country if a new bill is passed into a law by the United States Congress. The Rebuilding Infrastructure Bill is aimed to sustain and enduring peace in South Sudan. The bill was authored by the Office of Congresswoman Karen Bass, a Democrat from the West Coast state of California, and is being introduced for consideration today into the House Committee on Foreign Affairs. The bill will provide fellowship to help the former lost boys and girls return to South Sudan and help rebuild the country by doing the same kind of work they performed here in the United States. Former lost boy David Achot, a legislative fellow for Karen Bass and one of the authors of the bill, says most of these young South Sudanese have acquired professional skills in medical, educational, and health sectors in U.S., which could help people of South Sudan.
Looking at nurses, for example, there are no enough hospitals across South Sudan. We have so many South Sudanese who are working here as nurses, as LPN, those who are working as physician assistants. Then what we will do is give these people opportunities to go to South Sudan, and they can be teaching others to become nurses and physician assistants at the same time while delivering health services to the local population.
And 500 people or 500 lost boys and lost girls are going to be eligible, is that correct?
So the bill is starting out now with 500 people because, and the underlying truth in that is you have to start somewhere. And if there are more than 500 people who are interested in going to South Sudan, that can be addressed in the future. But for now, 500, if we can get 500 well-qualified individuals. And again, we are not only looking at people with education background. We are also looking at individuals who have not gone to college, but they have done certain work for a very long time. Therefore, they become expert in that field. And that actually allow us to expand the field, to more than 500 in the future.
The United States has already spent $1.7 billion in South Sudan. Why should they spend more?
Well, you are spending money now on people who are delivering skill service to South Sudan. The problem, the problem with the money that the global community has spent in South Sudan has been they either give money to the aid agencies or give money directly to institutions in South Sudan, such as government and others. And the problem with that is you are giving money with no accountability. The difference in this program now is you will have a citizen of the United States going into South Sudan and doing work with responsibility and accountability on their necks. The program, as you read in the program, will have USAID and State Department involvement. So there will be accountability for individuals to breed, result. We have to do one thing at a time. So if you read the bills or if you hear the titles, have something to do with lost boys and lost girls, that doesn't mean the other South Sudanese are not considered. I have to push for what I think can sell to members of Congress and their constituencies. And the only way we could get something done is to do it as a lost boy, lost girl project. But there is room for expansion once we see the success of this. So I'm asking everybody to support it. This is for our country, and this is not an individual effort or anything beside that. It is for all of us to see the South Sudan we all yearn for.
Now, David, it's an election year. You and I both know lawmakers are going to be looking at the campaign trail. Are you worried that that will prolong this bill getting passed into law?
The answer is yes, I'm worried. But what we will do after the bill is introduced is to continue maintain that push. We will continue to have advocacy day, on the Hill, as we will have one tomorrow. But we will continue to have these advocacy day. We will continue to call the Speaker office, push Ms. Bass and other members for them to get the bill through.
As you just said, a large part of this bill is returning lost boys and lost girls to South Sudan. Are you worried, though, that the current conflict in the country could discourage lawmakers from passing the bill?
You always have to worry, but the objective way of looking at the current crisis is that how do you cut the cord of the recycle of violence in South Sudan? And how do you introduce a future that many South Sudanese can look toward to? And the ideal answer for that is to start with a grassroots reform by bringing in people with the skills, people that have work background, work ethics, to do basic work in communities, to educate people in communities so that people can start preparing themselves to understand what democracy is.
That's David Achot, a legislative fellow for U.S. lawmaker Karen Bass. He was speaking to Ayen Bior yesterday at our studios here in Washington. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thank you, John. A UN Commission on Human Rights is calling for the government and the African Union to stop waiting and quickly form a hybrid court to try thousands of suspected criminals after the fighting began in December 2013, as required by the peace deal. Today, commission members wrapped up a seven-day visit to the country, where they met internally displaced persons, judiciary officials, and civil society activists. Commission Chairperson Yasmin Suka says IDPs whom the team met want to see perpetrators of human rights abuses and other crimes punished. She says citizens made a poignant plea to the team for justice and accountability while they were in South Sudan. Suka says the groups and individuals her commission met this past week are convinced that breaking the cycle of impunity requires holding perpetrators of abuses accountable. The South Sudan Commission of Human Rights was established by the Human Rights Council in March with a mandate of monitoring and reporting on human rights since the fighting broke out in late 2013 so that transitional justice and reconciliation can begin. The United States says it will back an arms embargo on South Sudan if the country's government blocks the deployment of a regional protection force in the war-torn country and continues to block the movement of UN staffers and peacekeepers. Analysts say an arms embargo has been used as a bargaining chip for way too long, but they say it's better late than never. A former arms expert on the UN panel of experts on South Sudan, Luke Vandervoort, told VOA the United States has used the threat of an arms embargo is leveraged several times, including when they pressed the government to sign a peace deal with the rebels. He says the delay may have given the government time to prepare. He's referring to a Reuters report earlier this month that says the UN sanctions monitors had learned that South Sudan's army chief had asked a Lebanese company to begin developing a small arms ammunition manufacturing facility in Juba. The report did not say whether the project had been built. And finally, a committee created by President Kiir to investigate the July attacks on international aid workers and the murder of a local journalist outside the terrain complex in Juba says it's having a hard time writing the report because witnesses are not speaking up. The committee secretary says the team couldn't find any victims since most of them had already left the country. The committee missed its deadline to submit a report. It's been a month since the president issued a decree appointing a committee to investigate the reports. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with this song. We have been listening to Southern King with the song Ana Miskin. I am John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.